We'll build our way to the November 23, 2012 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this week's rain report. Winter evenings for a great many hams can be pretty boring. So what to do? How about building something? Something like a low-powered QRP HF transceiver that you'd be able to operate with a minimum of RFI to one's neighbors. One ham who has been having a great deal of fun and success operating QRP is Rich Arland, K7SZ. According to the 2012 Dayton Hamvention Forum Guide, Rich, K7SZ, is a world-renowned QRPer. Originally licensed in 1963 as KN7YHA, using a Heathkit HR10 receiver and an EF Johnson Viking Adventure transmitter. He has been an active QRPer for almost 50 years. Rich joined QRP-ARCI in 1965. He has operated QRP from the Azores, CT2BH, Japan, KA2AA, England, G5CSU, and Germany, DA2NE. At the 2002 Dayton Hamvention, he was inducted into the QRP Hall of Fame. Rich has written extensively for the Radio Hobby Press and has been published in World Radio, CQ, Popcom, Monitoring Times, and QST. He wrote the QRP Power Column for QST from January of 2000 to December of 2003. Currently, he writes the Learning Curve Column for CQ Magazine and has authored a total of 7 books on ham radio, including all 4 editions of the book ARRL's Low Power Communications, The Art and Science of QRP. Here's an excerpt from his 2012 Hamvention talk entitled QRP and Homebrewing, Its Pleasures and Challenges.
With low power communications, there is a definite hookup. They're almost, hand in glove, joint at the hip kind of thing between building your own equipment and operating QRP. And the reason is QRP equipment can be extremely simple. There are several radios out there, complete transceivers with a parts count of less than 20 pieces. And that includes the active devices on the transistors. Not a lot of output, 400 or 500 milliwatts, but I used a contest with 900 milliwatts. So it's doable. And this is the kind of stuff that really intrigues a lot of people. And once they start doing it, they find out how easy it is to do. Things just kind of go on from there. What I have on the first slide is a 1929 Hartley that was built by one of the guys who contributed to my third edition of the book. And that is an all-homebrew tube-type transmitter using a 29 tube. Hal Kennedy, N4GG, decided he was going to embark upon a homebrew project. And that was to build a 1912 rotary spark gap. It took him 2 years. The electronics wasn't nearly as daunting as the woodworking. Believe it. I've seen this thing up close. This is Blue Lightning, a kilowatt spark gap. Right there, it's running at about 300 watts. And if you've never seen one, it is an eye-opener, literally. You can get killed by that radio, and I'm not getting one bit. That spark gap, I don't remember what his rotates at, but we always think of spark gaps as just being a damped wave. When you're listening to them, they hear a zzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzz running at 400 hertz, 400 cycles, it'll have a 400 hertz tone on the spark. Anybody remember the Titanic? A couple of old farts in here. I was at the Titanic exhibit down in Branson, Missouri here last month, and they had the duplicated radio room on the Titanic. I always thought they had a rotary spark gap. They had a fixed spark gap, which had no modulation on it. And then you're listening for an SOS on a noisy background on like 160 at night in the middle of the summertime, and you're listening to a spark gap transmitter. You can hardly hear it. It's amazing that they were able to be heard by anybody. But that's how it took him 2 years to build this, and that was a project and a half. And I'm not saying that that's the way to go, but it certainly is neat, and it's an evil-looking thing. And if you ever get a chance to see it in operation, you really need to take a close look at it, but not too close. Why do we homebrew? Homebrewing started for earnest back in one of the early days of ham radio, but it really took off right after World War II. Why? Because there was a whole treasure trove of surplus equipment.